ignorance. Ajita Indriyam, not having learned to control his senses. Vikarmanam, by not executing scriptural duty. He, indeed, adharmenam, by his irreligion. Mrityum, death after death, upati, achieves, sam, he. Translation and purport. If an ignorant person who has not conquered the material senses does not adhere to the Vedic injunctions, certainly he will engage in sinful and irreligious activities. Thus, his reward will be repeat birth and death. Purport. In the previous verse, it was stated that although fruitive activities are prescribed in the Vedas, the actual goal of human life is to free oneself from all materialistic activities. Therefore, one may conclude that there is no need to perform the Vedic rituals, which offer a regulated sense gratification. But an ignorant person, or in other words, one who has not understood that he is not the material body, but an eternal spiritual soul, part and parcel of Krishna, will invariably be unable to control the urges of the material senses. Therefore, if such materially inclined person neglects the Vedic injunctions that administer regulated sense gratification, he will surely fall down into unregulated sense gratification in papa or sinful life. For example, those who are affected by sexual desire are ordered to accept the Vivaha Yajna or religious marriage ceremony. We often see that because of false pride, a so-called brahmachari or celibate student of Vedic knowledge rejects the marriage ceremony as maya or material illusion. But if such celibate student is unable to control his senses, he will undoubtedly degrade himself by eventually engaging in a sex which has no connection to Vedic culture. Similarly, a neophyte in Krishna consciousness is encouraged to eat Krishna prasadam to his full satisfaction. Sometimes an immature practitioner of bhakti yoga tries to make a show of severe eating habits and eventually falls down into eating unregulated and abominable foodstuffs. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the words mrityu, mrityam, upati mean that a sinful person is awarded a free ticket to hell by the Lord of Death himself, Yamaraj. This is also described in the Vedas as follows: Mritva punar mrityum upadyate ardhyamana svakaram dahi. Persons who cause themselves severe pain by their materialistic activities gain no relief at the moment of death, for they are placed again in situation in which death will occur. Therefore, Vedic ritualistic activities, such as the wedding ceremony or the relishing of sumptuous yajna shishta or food remnants of sacrifice, should not be given up by those whose senses are not yet controlled. The previous verse gave the example of a father administering candy to his son to induce the child to take medicine. If the child rejects the father's offer, thinking that the candy is unnecessary, the child also miss the opportunity to take the medicine that will cure him. Similarly, if a materialistic person rejects the Vedic injunctions that administer prescribed sense gratification, he will not be purified, but instead will be further degraded. Srila Jiva Goswami has described a materialistic person as one whose mind and intelligence are not faithfully fixed in the message of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bhagavad Gita, Sri Bhagavan, Lord Krishna, gives wonderful explanations to the conditioned souls represented by Arjuna concerning the actual goal of life. One who cannot fix his mind on those instructions is to be considered a materialistic person who is inclined towards sinful activities and who must therefore submit himself to the standard Vedic injunctions. Such Vedic injunctions, even though fruitive, are considered punya or pious. Vedic injunctions Vedic injunctions, even though fruitive, are considered punya or pious, according to Srila Jiva Goswami, and thus one who strictly performs them will not go to hell. Lord Krishna himself states in Bhagavatam, Tavat Karmani Kurvita Na Nirvedyata Javata Mat Kutas Shabanadi Vam Shraddha Yavan Najayate. One should continue to perform the Vedic ritualistic activities until one actually becomes detached from material sanctification and develops faith for hearing and chanting about me. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the Vedas prescribe that one rise early in the morning, bathe and chant the Gayatri mantra. If one artificially gives up such a disciplined, regulated life, one will gradually become a victim of activities for gross sense gratification, such as eating in restaurants, indulging in illicit connections with women or men, thus losing control of his senses. He becomes just like an animal, engaging from the early morning until the night in dangerous activities. Srila Madhvacharya has commented in this regard, Ajnas nan acharan api. Although in ignorance, one continues to act, not considering the future result of one's activities. Such indifference to the future result of one's activities is described in Bhagavad Gita to be a symptom of the mood of ignorance. Just as an intelligent man will not drive his car on a highway if he knows the highway will lead him to danger, one intelligent man will not perform non-Vedic activities if he knows that the ultimate result will be disaster, described here by the words mrityur, mrityum upati. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has stated that ignorant persons sometimes think that after death, one automatically attains everlasting peace. But by the powerful reactions of one's sinful activities, one comes to most unpeaceful condition, for one must suffer hellish miseries in exchange for the meager temporary fruits of material work. Such hellish reactions occur not once, but perpetually, as long as one is indifferent to the Vedic injunctions. Na charedyastu vedoktam svayam agnyo jitendriham karmana hiya dharmena mrityur mrityum upatisam. If an ignorant person who has not conquered the material senses does not adhere to the Vedic injunctions, certainly he will engage in sinful and irreligious activities. Thus his reward will be repeated birth and death. Om Magyana Kimirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Maitam Yama Chakshuru Vancha Kalpa Turbisha Kripa Simbivacha Paditanam Pavanudya Vaishnavita Namo Namaha. So, in this verse we find there's many very important points covered. And as we can see through this chapter, how it's progressing. Essentially, all chapter is actually based just on four questions. If you kind of start from beginning and you look throughout all the chapter, King Nimi, he actually just asked four questions, but they are really, really important questions. And the sages, you know, first were explaining. His first question was, please describe the illusory potency of the Supreme. And then he was asking, please explain how even a foolish person can cross over the illusory energy. And then he asked, please explain the transcendental situation of the Supreme. What are his activities? How is he related to all the creation? And then finally, the last question, which we are actually now discussing, the question was, Please speak to us about the process of karma yoga. So King Nimi is setting the perfect example of the civilized human being inquiring about the real meaning of human form of life. And the sages, they explain in many details how first to understand what this material world is about, how does the three moods of nature work and trap the conditioned living entity to take the birth after birth, another form of life. So finally, in these last few verses, we see King Nimi is asking, so practically, what should one do? And then the sages, they're describing the karma yoga, which are activities that are utilized to gradually purify the soul and taking back home to God. So the verse itself is basically meant to point us to the bigger picture. So just like if you would look at this beautiful picture that Pushkar Prabhu made, you know, we can see, okay, there's grass, there's, flowers, birds. But, you know, somebody may say, oh, why did they choose this frame? Why didn't choose something else? So one can, you know, start to be critical about, you know, things that are really not essential and miss the point what Pushkar Prabhu was trying to present in this beautiful painting. And you see Radha Krishna and Gopis and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu basically meditating on that. So the purpose of the Vedic culture is to focus our attention to the real meaning of life and to connect to the source of eternal pleasure, bliss, and knowledge. So the modern society is designed to do exactly opposite. With all different distractions, different gadgets and propaganda, it is basically designed to take our attention away from our real self-interest. So it's important to think deeply and be very, very reflective. What is this human form of life designed to do? Just like, for example, if you take a cell phone. I heard this story from one of our devotees, Gaur Gopal Prabhu. You know, the cell phone itself is designed for essentially communicating, you know. If you want to call your friend or family and say hello, how are you doing? That is the basic function of the cell phone. However, nowadays, the technology has turned even that little gadget into something that has, you know, so many apps, you know, all different gadgets, all different screen covers and papers. So one can pretty much get so entangled into that and, you know, even forget what's the phone for. So Gaur Gopal Prabhu was telling the story. One time he was traveling on the airplane, and as he was sitting peacefully, you know, minding his business, all of a sudden he realized one man, you know, a few rows down the, you know, in the plane, he was doing something like strange, like, and Gaur Gopal Prabhu, he's very curious. So he kind of peeked and like, what is he doing? And the man was doing something like this. And making, you know, very, you know, loud noise. So Gaur Gopal Prabhu thought like, what is going on? Like, you know, this is really strange. So he kind of, you know, leaned up a little bit to see like, what is this man doing? And he noticed he's holding the cell phone in one hand and doing like this. And then he kind of peeked even closer and he realized the man was chanting Om Namo Shivaya, Om Namo Shivaya, Om Namo Shivaya. And you know, that's fine, chanting Lord Shiva's names, it's perfectly fine, we have no problem with that. Lord Shiva is pure devotee. But he was wondering, why is he slapping his phone? So he approached the gentleman and he said, excuse me, sir, I see you chanting the name of Lord Shiva, but why on the phone? Why don't you just use the beads? And the man said, oh no, that's not cool anymore. So apparently there's even an app that you can chant on, like, you know, just by, you know, slapping the screen of the cell phone, like, you know. So we can see, like, you know, instead of just holding the japa beads and, you know, chanting the mantra, you know, people are coming with so many concoctions and, you know, it's in one way to make a more show rather than real meditation. Because, you know, you have a cell phone and it has some cool new app. So it's really a question, like, why so many distractions? Another time he was also traveling and he was in Austria and trying to connect the flight to Italy. And as he was waiting, and, you know, usually that wouldn't take more than, like, you know, maybe 1.5 hour to get from Austria to Italy. It's pretty close. And he was even scheduled for the evening program to give a class, and, you know, people were waiting. So as he was waiting, suddenly announcement came and said the plane is being delayed for like 2 hours. So he was thinking, okay, you know, I still have plenty of time. The evening program is not till like late, you know, 7 o'clock, and, you know, it was maybe like 2 in the afternoon. So the time was passing, and then they made a second announcement. Oh, sorry, the plane is being delayed another 2 hours. So now he's getting really nervous, and he's thinking, like, gosh, you know, I need to call devotees in Italy to let them know I'm being late. And then he thought, like, you know, he has, like, you know, he pulled his Apple iPhone and thought, like, you know, this is the best phone in the world. I should have no problem connecting. But unfortunately, there was no signal. No signal. So he was, you know, he went outside the airport and thought, maybe I will catch a signal. No, nothing. And then he was just standing, like, you know, totally in an anxiety. And then all of a sudden he noticed one elderly lady, you know, in her, like, you know, maybe mid-70s. She had, like, really, really old, like, Motorola phone, like, you know, one that you don't even see. And nowadays, you know, they're, like, big and, like, you know, kind of heavy. And she was talking and talking and talking to somebody for almost, like, 45 minutes. And Gaura Gopala Prabhu was thinking, like, gosh, like, you know, here I'm with my coolest phone and I can't even make a, you know, simple phone call, and I can't connect to devotees. So the point, you know, I'm trying to make is, we can get easily sidetracked. Our main goal in life is to connect to Lord Krishna. We have this human form of life, which is the boon itself. And it's meant to reestablish our forgotten relationship with the Lord. After so many lifetimes and so many experiences, our subconsciousness is filled with so many impressions. So the Vedic culture is designed to help us. It's designed to create new impressions. Therefore, we have Vedic samskaras, which are essentially like, if you know the old LP records, plastic ones, they had kind of like a long lines. And if you put it on the record player, the music would come. So all those lines are like impressions or different samskaras. So similarly, our subtle mind and consciousness is filled with many impressions of previous lives. And the Vedic culture will help us purify all these tendencies that are not conducive to achievement of a real success of life. So the verse is saying here, that one has to learn to control the senses, mind and senses. And it's not the optional, you know, like in school, you know, there is certain tests you have to pass. You know, you can't move to the next grade unless you learn, you know, certain chapters. So similarly, In the process of bhakti yoga, self-realization, control of senses and mind is not an option. Everybody has to learn it. For some it may be easier than for the others, but everybody has to come to that point. Now, the beautiful thing about Krishna consciousness, Srila Prabhupada made it easy for us. We have so many wonderful activities to engage ourselves that really make the sense control, I wouldn't say totally, you know, eliminated, but it makes it so much easier. Imagine if you have to sit for like, you know, hundreds of years somewhere in like a jungle and meditate without any association. How difficult would that be? But by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we have this beautiful society of Krishna consciousness. Recently we had Govardhan Puja, and when I came, I was just like, you know, totally overwhelmed to see so many devotees. And then I saw Divyanga Prabhu. Oh, there he is. And he told me, he said, I just came from Sankirtan, and this is amazing. You know, if you're out in the society and, you know, with the people who really have no information about the Lord and Krishna consciousness, and then you come to the beautiful festival where, you know, devotees are dressed so nicely, everybody is so positive, there is such amazing spiritual energy. It's another planet. So I could relate to his statement, like, you know, this is not part of this material world. Like, as soon as you cross the gate of, you know, our community, you entering the spiritual world, literally. So the beauty of our society, we have each other to help to make that advancement in Krishna consciousness. There's one interesting story I'm going to share with you, which kind of, you know, exemplifies this point. So one time there was a shipwreck. People were traveling on the ship, and all of a sudden the storm came and the ship was finished. So there was two men, and somehow they survived. They swam to the, you know, they swam for a long time, and they finally they reached one island. Unfortunately, the island was empty. There was nobody, no people, no grocery stores, nothing. So it was just two of them, and it was a small island. So they thought, like, you know, what can we do? You know, so they made a decision, we're going to pray to God and see what happens. So one of the two, he stayed on one side of the island, and the other one went to the other side of the island. And they decided, we're going to pray jointly, and, you know, we will see whose prayers are being effective, and then go from there. So as the time was progressing, first they were praying, you know, for the food, and then all of a sudden, you know, shortly after, like, you know, next morning, there was, you know, some big, you know, containers. They just arrived from nowhere, apparently from, you know, the ship, and they were like, you know, stored food and drinks and everything was inside. So the first man, he thought, like, woohoo, you know, I have something to eat. So he was happy. So then he thought, like, you know, thank you, God, you answered my prayer. And then he was praying. He thought, like, you know, after, you know, maybe a few weeks, he thought, like, I'm too lonely here, you know, there's nobody. So, and the, even the other man, he, like, you know, far on the other side, he, you know, I don't see him. So he was lonely. So he was starting, you know, he started praying, you know, I need a wife. And then, you know, the following day, there was another shipwreck, and the only survivor was a lady. I don't know how, but it happened. So there was a lady. So he was now, you know, in a bliss. He was not lonely. And then, you know, after a while, he started praying, you know, he needs some more facility, and you know, things were just happening. Like he would just go to the shore of the island and he would find some amazing things. And then finally, after maybe, you know, several months or maybe a year, he started thinking, you know, we should really not live here. You know, there is no really future for us, he was telling to his wife. So he started praying, my dear God, please, please send another ship to take us away from here. And surely enough, you know, next morning, somehow another ship came, and there were rescue teams, and like they, you know, they came down and they brought the man and the wife, and they were happy to finally escape this. It was miserable condition. So as he was leaving, suddenly the voice appeared on the sky and said, "Hey, how could you leave your companion?" And the man, "Who? What? What?" And the voice said, the other man that came with you, that was praying with you, that told you to pray to God, how could you leave him?" And the first man said, "Well, you know, we both prayed, and God only answered my prayers. So this is the result of my praying. You know, I'm really not responsible what's happening to him. Apparently his prayers have no effect." And the voice said again, "No, actually, the only reason your prayer is being answered is because of him." And then the man actually became even more curious. "How is that so?" And then the man said, "Please tell me, what did he do to make my prayer work? You know, how is he involved?" And the voice said, "Well, he only prayed for one thing. And that thing is he prayed that all of your prayers may be answered. That was the only thing he was praying. He was praying just for your well-being and your happiness. Totally selfless." So then the man came to his senses and he realized, "Oh my God, I'm really being selfish here. Like, you know, like I totally ignore my friend that, you know, and he actually inspired me to approach God in the first place." So the point of the story is, you know, sometimes we may think like, you know, in Krishna consciousness, you know, we live in the largest community in America, you know, here I am the only guy. But no, actually, we are so fortunate. This is the most wonderful community, in the world. There is many nice, but I would say this is really unique community because we have several generations, not just, you know, one, several generations serving together, worshiping together, chanting together. So that is the beauty of our Vedic culture. And often, you know, when we, even if we have made any advancement, we should realize it's really not due to my endeavors. You know, who am I? But it's because of other people, my parents, my teachers, my spiritual masters. There's so many people who have invested into us. So we should always be grateful and try to remember what is the bigger picture, like this verses. Trying to point to us, yeah, the Vedas, they prescribe controlled, regulated sense gratification. It is there, but that's not the ultimate goal. It is just the structure to help us advance further, make further progress in the spiritual life. Therefore, Prabhupada presented the Varna Ashrama Dharma, which kind of sets the structure, a framework in basically which one can function and understand, you know, if I'm at this age, I can engage in these activities, you know, if I'm, you know, brahmachari, then the responsibilities come as we grow grihastha. And then from the grihastha comes, actually Prabhupada often mentioned in Vedic society, the role of grihastha is really, really important because first they produce qualified brahmacharis and brahmacharinis. And then later on, those same grihasthas, as they advance, they can take even further responsibilities in the role of vanaprast and sannyas. And all societies that were peaceful has, as Prabhupada would say, head, and it's not like, you know, just body without the head. The Brahmanical culture is dominant. So, I know there's much more to cover in this beautiful verse, but the time is limiting us. I think I will stop here. If anybody would like to make any comment or question, we can try to discuss further. If not, we will stop here. Thank you so much for your attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you.